Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Pam Bondi is going to clean up the Department of Justice. That is priority one for returning the power to the people and ending the weaponization of this government against the people. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. I appreciate you being here. Appreciate you being here every day. We got a great show for you. We're loaded up today. Some great guests. Dr. Victoria Coates will be here in just a few moments, so stay right there. But I want to share with you a couple more audio clips from today. This is Senator Marco Rubio, as he joked, actually, at the beginning of the confirmation hearing. Pretty funny, I thought. This was a good, kind of a good lighthearted moment to start what would otherwise become not really, I mean, it was milquetoast, like Rubio's kind of milquetoast. The whole kind of confirmation hearing was milquetoast. Senators have courtesy. Senators always get confirmed. It's kind of a thing. But anyway, cut number four.
Let me just say it's a bit surreal to be on this side of the room, but you all look very distinguished. I want you to know that.
Yeah. We know.
In the 249-year history of our republic, there's only been 71 other Americans who have served in the role and the position that President Trump has now nominated me to occupy. And I want to thank him for his confidence. And it's an incredible honor. It is also, as many of you have already pointed out, an extraordinary responsibility. Three of my children, Amanda, Anthony, and Dominic, could not be here with us today or join us here in person. But I am happy that my wife, Jeanette, is here and that my daughter, Daniela, is here with me as well, because I think, as each of you know well, it really is impossible to do our job in the Senate, not to mention the job I've been nominated for, without the love and the support of our families.
He talked about China, and I think this is a very powerful point that he made. Again, look, the job of the Secretary of State is to do the president's bidding on the world stage and to represent the United States of America at a bunch of meetings. But the president drives the policy. Congress technically drives foreign policy, but the president drives foreign policy too in a big, big way. There's different roles here in all of this, obviously. But if you look at our current Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken is running this country. That's not, of course, how it's supposed to be. But Rubio's warning on China is a valid point. Cut number five.
If we stay on the road we're on right now, in less than 10 years, virtually everything that matters to us in life will depend on whether China will allow us to have it or not. Everything from the blood pressure medicine we take to what movies we get to watch and everything in between, we will depend on China for it. They have come to dominate the critical mineral industry supplies throughout the world. Everywhere in the world, they've now established critical mineral rights. Even those who want to see more electric cars, no matter where you make them, those batteries are almost entirely dependent on the ability of the Chinese and the willingness of the Chinese Communist Party to produce it and export it to you. So if we don't change course, we are going to live in a world where much of what matters to us on a daily basis, from our security to our health, will be dependent on whether the Chinese allow us to have it or not. That's an unacceptable outcome.
Think about this. China hates us. They do. China believes in total domination in the world. That's their philosophy. It's their thinking. Most of our medicine, antibiotics, other things that we depend on and rely on, I wouldn't say most, but a good majority, good share of them, made in China. I mean, we saw this during COVID, right? We were turned around and all these medical supplies we need come from China. We cannot be in that position. We cannot be in a position like that. And he's right to make that warning about China. Absolutely. 100%. China wants to dominate the world economically, militarily, every aspect of it. And the only way we keep Xi Jinping in his lane is to make him fear the United States of America. That's how we do it. And look, I don't rule out the idea that China released COVID from the lab on purpose. Like I've said to you before, a lab leak could have been absolutely 100% something that was preordained, not necessarily accidental. Lab leak conveys the idea that it was an accident, but that's not necessarily the case. Could have leaked out of the lab because they wanted it to leak out of the lab. I find the timing of the fact that the Military World Games were going on in Wuhan, China, in the fall of 2019, when the first cases of COVID-like cases were reported, to be just, I don't know, a big coincidence. And I don't believe in coincidences. Rubio also talked about the war in Ukraine. Cut number six.
It's unacceptable. There's no doubt about it. But this war has to end. And I think it should be the official policy of the United States that we want to see it end. Now, what that master plan looks like is going to be hard work. This is not going to be an easy endeavor. But it's going to require bold diplomacy. And my hope is that it begin with some ceasefire. And we're going to have, in order to achieve objectives like the one that needs to occur in Ukraine, it is important for everyone to be realistic. There will have to be concessions made by the Russian Federation, but also by the Ukrainians, and the United States has lent itself there. It's also important that there be some balance.
I think that if you saw the primary, the way it played out, you had the battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party with the people that want to see the war in Ukraine keep going. And then the others who realize now that it's unrealistic, it's an unrealistic position. Ukraine can't win. The United States of America cannot be the big writing the checks here. And that the military-industrial complex is making a ton of cash on this. That battle played out. Trump won, thank God. Nikki Haley would have been in the other camp had she won. Where do you think Rubio would be if it was left up to him? He'd go wherever, stick his finger in the wind, and you know that's what I mean about him. But he's not calling the shots. That's not his job to call the shots. That's President Trump's job to call the shots. And Congress's too. I mean, by authorizing money and authorizing use of force if necessary. But that's not the Secretary of State's job. I think Marco Rubio, had the wind shifted in the other direction, would have been all about keeping this war going as long as possible. It's my sense of it. I don't think he'll be a Secretary of State that'll be impactful. I don't think he'll last long in the job, and I'm okay with that. I really am. He talked about Hamas and the ceasefire deal, which occurred actually during his confirmation hearing today. Senator Dave McCormick of Pennsylvania, our buddy who will be on the show today at 5:15 p.m., questioning Rubio on this point, cut number seven.
Since October 7th, there's been a disturbing rise in anti-Semitism, pro-terrorist violence in our cities, on college campuses. You and I had the opportunity to write an op-ed together. And in that op-ed, we called on foreign nationals who support Hamas or other terrorist organizations to lose their visas and to be sent back to their home countries. As Secretary of State, of course, you'll be responsible for overseeing the issuance of visas. How will you enforce our laws to ensure that we remove supporters of terrorist groups from our country?
Listen, my view on this is one of common sense. Okay, if you apply for a visa to come into the United States, and in the process of being looked at, it comes to light that you're a supporter of Hamas, we wouldn't let you in. If we knew you were a supporter of Hamas, we would not give you a visa. So now that you got the visa and you're inside the U.S. and now we realize you're a supporter of Hamas, we should remove your visa. If you could not come in because you're a supporter of Hamas, you should not be able to stay on a visa if you're a supporter of Hamas. That's how I view it. And I think that's just an issue of common sense. And we intend to be very forceful about that.
Good. Thank you.
A point I want to mention, too, is that Joe Biden taking credit for this hostage deal today is a joke. It's a friggin' joke. You know, and I know, this is Hamas knowing that you don't F around with Donald Trump. That's what this is. But nevertheless, Joe Biden had a rush to the microphones. Couldn't wait to get out there and try to take credit for this. This is cut number 25. President Biden today, after the ceasefire deal was announced. Here we go.
Because at long last, I can announce a ceasefire and a hostage deal has been reached between Israel and Hamas. For more than 15 months of conflict that began with Hezbollah's brutal massacre on October the 7th, more than 15 months of terror for the hostages, their families, the Israeli people, more than 15 months of suffering by the innocent people of Gaza. Fighting in Gaza will stop, and soon the hostages will return home to their families. The elements of this deal were what I laid out in detail this past May, which was embraced by countries around the world and endorsed overwhelmingly by the UN Security Council. The deal is structured in three phases. Phase one will last 6 weeks. It includes a full and complete ceasefire, withdrawal of Israeli forces from all the populated areas of Gaza, and the release of a number of hostages held by Hamas, including women and elderly and the wounded. And I'm proud to say Americans will be part of that hostage release in phase one as well.
Now, 15 months. Why do you think this is happening today on Wednesday, January, what is it, the 15th today? Why? Is it because of that bumbling fool, or is it because of what President Trump said last week at Mar-a-Lago 6 days ago? 6 days ago. This is what he said. I played it earlier. I'm going to play it again for you, though. Cut 24.
If those hostages aren't back, I don't want to hurt your negotiation. If they're not back by the time I get into office, all hell will break out in the Middle East. And it will not be good for Hamas, and it will not be good, frankly, for anyone. All hell will break out. I don't have to say anymore, but that's what it is.
That's it. A reporter actually asked Biden today, who gets the credit for this deal, you or Trump? Cut 26.
Who does the history books credit for this, Mr. President, you or Trump?
Is that a joke? Oh, thank you. Thanks, sir.
All right, Justin, cue the music. There we go. Boom. On a day like today, there is simply no one better, and I mean no one better, than the author of the book, Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. She is the vice president of the Davis Institute for Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation, former deputy national security advisor to President Donald Trump, and Philadelphia's own, the one and only Dr. Victoria Coates. Hello, my friend.
Rich, it is wonderful to have you back. How are you feeling?
Feeling better. High as a kite on painkillers, but you know, it's how we roll. So, no, I'm good. Thank you. I do feel better. I'm trying very hard to just, keep my foot elevated and stay still, which is not easy for me, Doc. Not easy.
I can imagine.
Yeah. As my wife puts it, I'm a bull in a china shop. So they may have to like physically strap me down like Hannibal Lecter in a cart. But I'm grateful you made time today. I know you're in high demand on a day like today. First of all, congratulations. Your book is officially out. It is a must read. I look forward to being with you in person to talk about the book and bring it to everybody's attention. But let's go with this big announcement today. Give us the 30,000-foot view of what was announced and then your take on it, please.
Yep. What we appear to have here is a three-phased hostage deal between Israel and Hamas to start to bring the rest of the, I guess, 98 hostages that Hamas says that they have, either bodies or live, under their control, which does leave some number of people who are unaccounted for. That's going to be a separate problem. This deals with the 98, and it's a three-phase deal. The first phase involves Israel releasing Palestinian criminals from their jails in return for the so-called humanitarian hostages, which are women and children, the critically ill, and men over 50. So that would happen as soon as Sunday, if this is ratified by the Israeli cabinet tomorrow. So that looks likely to happen. Israel would also withdraw from major population centers in Gaza, allowing a humanitarian aid to come in. They have said that they will not withdraw from security critical areas like the Philadelphia corridor along the border with Egypt. I think that's smart. And then there's sort of a period of about 6 weeks to see if all of this holds. And that will be the critical period for Hamas. If they decide that they are not going to attack Israel during that time, they're not going to violate any of the terms of the ceasefire, we could potentially see a phase two, which would be additional Israeli withdrawals for the rest of the hostages. I don't know, Rich, if that's going to happen. In my opinion, this was necessary. The window is closing in which we can get these folks out alive, given the horrible circumstances under which they've been held. But I don't know that this is a sustainable deal. I don't know that Hamas can hold by these terms. And, you know, one worries that if Israel doesn't really finish this job, we're just going to be back here again. So everyone should rejoice on Sunday when we see those poor souls coming out of that hellish situation. But at best, this is the end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end.
Give us a sense, Dr. Coates, about the conditions that the hostages are being held.
You know, it just gets grimmer and grimmer. It appears that they're being held in these terror tunnels that can be as much as 30 feet underground, not seeing the sun, having no sanitation, very limited food. And just living in blackness with the occasional visit from the terrorists, who I think treat them just very abusively. The few that have come out so far or have been found after they've been executed have been emaciated. They've all, you know, lost so much weight. Some of them have health conditions that are just getting worse because they're not getting any care. And that's what I mean. I mean, there just may not be much more time to get them out. So if we can bring comfort to at least some of those families in Israel who have been also in their version of hell for more than 400 days, you know, I think that is a necessary step.
Do you think that Israel is going to ratify this deal tomorrow?
I do. There is a ton of political pressure that right now the support amongst the Israeli public for this kind of a deal is at about 88%. And so that is, you know, pretty aggressive support. Now, within the Netanyahu coalition, there is also a lot of resistance to this from the so-called far right wingers. And so we could potentially see a collapse of the Israeli government tomorrow. In terms of those people withdrawing. Now, there are others in the Knesset who have said they will join the Netanyahu coalition if that happens. So I don't think that coalition might dissolve. I don't think the government's going to fall tomorrow, but there could be some political upheaval.
When you say the government falls, just so we understand their system of government and how that works, how does that work?
They're a parliamentary system like mm-hmm. Canada. So they have what you do is you elect your legislative body. In Israel, it's called the Knesset. And then whoever can achieve a group of a majority of those Knesset members then gets to form a government. He or she selects their cabinet ministers from other members of the Knesset. So everyone in the Israeli cabinet is also an elected legislator, so which is sort of interesting. And when that group majority breaks up for whatever reason, as periodically happens, you then either have to form a new government call elections or form a new coalition within the existing group.
Dr. Coates, a lot of people, the left hate Netanyahu. Many of them were disrespectful to him when he came to Congress. They consider him to be a hardliner. But you're saying there's people that are even, I'd say, more of a hardliner than Netanyahu, and that would be the concern at this point?
Well, it's actually pretty ironic because Benjamin Netanyahu has never in his life been what we would consider to be social conservative. He's always been a more socially liberal economic hawk, yes. And I think one of his great roles for Israel was as the finance minister who did so much to bring Israel from its existing socialist economy into a much more free market modern economy and has contributed so much to Israel's prosperity. But the notion that Netanyahu is some kind of right wing kook is just wrong. The Likud party that he runs is, yes, right of center, but but that is, that certainly is not on the extreme. And they do tend to partner with the right wing groups to get to their majority. But he personally, though, the fact that he has become such a magnet for hatred on the left is just bizarre to me. I mean, he marches in the gay pride parade in Tel Aviv, which is one of the biggest in the world. It's just not real. It's kind of a straw man that he's been turned into by the left to justify their dislike of Israel.
Dr. Victoria Coates is with me. She is the author of The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. It's a must-read book. It is, I think, one of the most important foreign policy books of our time. Former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump. I want to read you what he posted on Truth Social a short time ago. He said, "This epic," in all caps, "ceasefire agreement could have only happened as a result of our historic victory in November, as a signal to the entire world that my administration would seek peace and negotiate deals to ensure the safety of all Americans and our allies. I am thrilled American and Israeli hostages will be returning home to be reunited with their families and loved ones. With this deal in place, my national security team, through the efforts of Special Envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, will continue to work closely with Israel and our allies to make sure Gaza never again becomes a terrorist safe haven. We will continue promoting peace through strength throughout the region, so we build upon the momentum of the ceasefire to further expand the historic Abraham Accords," something you, of course, Dr. Coates, work closely on. "This is only the beginning of great things to come for America and indeed the world. We have achieved so much without even being in the White House. Just imagine all the wonderful things that will happen when I return to the White House and my administration is fully confirmed so they can secure more victories for the United States." Your thoughts on that?
Well, that has the added advantage of being completely accurate. As we've discussed, I was in Israel when the president-elect made his first statement in December on the hostages. We had waited at that point 14 months to hear clarity out of American leadership that Hamas had the burden here. Hamas had to let them go. And that was going to be a demand from the United States. And that's when things started to move. And I think, that the president-elect should take credit for that. We will hear President Biden try to take, we've heard it already today, yep, when he identified his interlocutor as the Emir of Kuwait, which I think came as a surprise to him, since it was actually the Emir of Qatar who participated in that.
But Qatar, Kuwait, I mean, come on.
One starts with a Q, one starts with a K. It's just a letter, whatever.
It sounds like a K, so,
But I think he's also pointing to the broader strategic importance of this, because the countries that would engage in additional Abraham Accords style deals, they are going to need some resolution in Gaza. And at the very least here, even if Hamas violates this deal next week, the Israelis can say, look, we tried. We made a good faith offer for them. We had a pathway to peace. They rejected it. And this is a little bit what happened, 4 years ago with UAE and Bahrain and Morocco, where they're just like, we can't give the Palestinians an infinite veto over our prospects for peace. It's just not fair. And so I think the president took a big step today towards getting toward the circumstances that would allow for, more Abraham Accords, including the sort of granddaddy of them all, which would be the Israel-Saudi Arabia deal.
When President Trump said 6 days ago at Mar-a-Lago, those hostages have to be returned or there'll be hell to pay. And Biden today says, he tries to take credit for this, 15 months, and this is the same deal that was offered months ago. I think every reasonable person can conclude that Hamas only agreed to this because of what Trump said 6 days ago at Mar-a-Lago, because nothing else has changed other than that.
No, 100%. That's exactly why it's happening. And I think, in that post that you just read, the president further signaled that Hamas is not going to be left to reconstitute itself, and that there are many critics of the deal who are rightly concerned about that this doesn't eliminate Hamas. But I think what the president-elect is signaling there is that's still very much on the table, and that he's certainly not going to stand by and allow Hamas to reconstitute itself with American taxpayer dollars, which is going to be the natural impetus of the career folks at the State Department will be to just keep that money flowing. I bet one of the other things that happens is that money gets turned off on day one, on Monday afternoon, by the new Trump administration.
We have a lot more to talk about. I hope you'll join me again this Friday for our regularly scheduled chat, because there's so much to cover. But I really do thank you for making time today on this incredibly important and potentially historic day. The battle for the Jewish state, how Israel and America can win. Please get your copy today. Dr. Victoria Coates, thank you, my friend.
Keep feeling better. Take care, Rich.
Thank you.
And Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
We'll take a quick break and we'll come right back. We have another guest lined up straight ahead, so don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So we've talked a lot about the weaponization of government, something that the incoming Attorney General Pam Bondi is going to fix, let's hope. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Great to have you with us today. And I'm very, very excited to welcome to the show Bob Livingston. Was a member of Congress and a true fighter for freedom and liberty. Former United States Congressman, founding partner of the Livingston Group. He represented Louisiana's first congressional district and was the first Republican to do so in 102 years. And his latest op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, "My firm, the Livingston Group, was subjected to your unjust persecution, Merrick Garland. We'd like an apology." Congressman, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you very much, Rich. Glad to be with you. I'm just great.
Excellent. Excellent. So let's talk about what Merrick Garland did to you. I mean, the weaponization, this guy, it's so many Americans were targeted. Your firm was one of them. Tell us about it.
Well, I'm just a political person, a Republican, a conservative, and I was just one of the many targets for the Garland DOJ. But lawfare, which is what he did, he targeted us, is not unusual. It's not akin just to Republicans and Democrats. It's been going on for many years, and there have been a lot of innocent people that have been hurt by attacks from the other side for political or personal reasons by prosecutors who have far too much power. That said, the Garland administration really took the concept of lawfare, attacking your opponents for political reasons, to a fine art. And they've knocked a lot of people by the wayside. The most important target, of course, is President Trump himself. I mean, nobody has been persecuted to the degree that he has been in the last 4 years. And you can really lay it all at the feet of Merrick Garland and President Biden. And I do. And so I'm a casualty, but I survived. I'm a former criminal prosecutor myself. I did it in three separate agencies. I was prosecuting people for about 6 years. And I tried to say, well, you know, if I've got a case and they violated the law, I got no problem with them. If you're going to do the crime, you got to do the time. That said, a prosecutor has tremendous power, mm-hmm. and if he wants to use it for malicious reasons and go after his targets, be they political or personal, he can ruin people, devastate them, even cause them their livelihoods and their lives. And we've seen it so many times, but in recent years we've seen it far, far too much under Garland.
Yeah, and this guy, I mean, I think he's angry that he was never put on the Supreme Court. And it seems like he's used his office as attorney general to execute that revenge. And he's also surrounded himself with people like the person who runs the DOJ's Office of Civil Rights, who's decided that you know, her job is going to be going after Catholics and her job is going to be going after people that pray outside abortion clinics. And I mean, everything about this Department of Justice has been about going after political enemies and protecting their friends. Tell us specifically what they did to your firm, the Livingston Group.
Well, we have a lobby shop. I'm a lawyer, but we have a lobby shop in Washington for the last 25 years. And we've done international work representing individuals or countries or whatever, as long as they wanted good relations for the United States and as long as it was in the interest of this country. That said, we've done it. We've had about 28 clients filing under what they call a FARA, or the Foreign Agents Registration Act. We have ever had a problem. We had a big client in 2018, a very significant political client in a country that everybody's heard of, but I'm not going to get into the details of that. Just simply to say that we did it like everybody else. We represented them for about 8 months, maybe 10 months, and no problem at all. We filed all our required forms. We followed the law. We told our clients, as we always did, that we're going to follow the law. We're not going to bend the law whatsoever. Okay, that happened in 2018. I heard that a guy that had brought us the case had been approached by the FBI in about 2020, but nothing ever came to that and put it out of my mind completely. All of a sudden, in 2022, two agents appear at my doorstep, and they interview me. We talked to them for about 2.5 hours. I didn't even think about Miranda warnings or any of that kind of stuff. I've been interviewed by FBI for years for political, not for political, but for investigations that they had. So I didn't think anything about it. I thought it was just background check on something. All of a sudden, at the end of the interview, they hand me a search warrant, and they want all my records.
Wow.
For everything that we had to do in 2018. Now, this was 2022.
Yeah.
And so the next several months were absolute hell. I called the very next day. I called the top agent. Said, "Are we a target?" I couldn't believe it. And they said, "Yeah, you're a target, and we're going to indict you and charge you with felonies, and we're going to convict you, and you're going to go to jail." That was effectively it. We got some very competent counsel. We fought it for 20 months. For every day and every night, I lived under the threat that I could be arrested by a SWAT team like they did to those Right to Life people, and they did to Steve Navarro, and Peter Navarro and so many other people. I thought a SWAT team could show up at our door and arrest me and throw me in jail at gunpoint. I thought my firm would collapse and my employees would be lose their jobs. Well, as it turned out, one of my employees was so scared by the tactics that the FBI used that he went to bed on December 31st, 2023, and he didn't wake up in 2024.
Oh, my gosh.
And the guy was about 55 years old and in great shape. And literally, the agent had scared him to death. And that stuff can't stand. So I wrote this article. I'm probably going to follow up with a book eventually. And I'm going to try to change the law, because prosecutors and investigators, FBI agents or whomever, have total power and they can't be sued. They've got immunity for most everything they do. But I want to make it so that if they do it maliciously, if they take targets maliciously for political or personal reasons, that they can be sued and they can be charged criminally if the evidence warrants. I'm not trying to close prosecutors down. I think we need good, solid prosecutors. We need good, solid investigators. And we need a decent and fair FBI.
Sure.
But when they act maliciously, I want to go after them, and I'm going to do everything I can in Congress to, I know a few of the people up there, I'm going to do everything I can to pass a law that says if you do it maliciously and without evidence, that you're subject to prison and certainly civil liability.
Good, good. Listen, Congressman, former Congressman Bob Livingston's with me right now. It's great to have him on the show. Couple things here I want to mention. Number one, you know, there's an old saying, which I know you're familiar with, the process is the punishment. You know, it's like the government knows that even if they can't get a conviction or even if they don't get you in court, they can still make your life a living hell. They can still turn your world upside down. They can still do all these things that can put so much stress on a person. And stress is a killer, obviously. And I'm so sorry about your colleague. I really am. That's heartbreaking to hear. And the second part about this is that there's never any ramifications for these people. And that's the other part about it, is that they know that they're going to get away with it. So,
Look at this guy, Jack Smith. Yeah. Smith that took Trump to the cleaners. He had no case.
Right.
All they can do is write reports now, but he never had a case to begin with. But he was working in tandem with Garland, and they worked with Bragg and with
Fannie
Willis, and everybody else. And they just trumped up all these, to use a word, all these cases against President Trump. And anybody that looks at it, I mean, here was the former president of the United States, and if they can do it to him, they can do it to anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, exactly right. And again, no ramifications. It's like, well, we can do whatever the hell we want. We don't get in trouble for it. I like your idea here because it would hold people accountable and it would act as a deterrent, hopefully, for some of these people. And I think, you know, as part of that, we need to enable other agents and people that are part of these cases who don't necessarily want to be part of this to be able to be whistleblowers and to be protected. Because I have a hard time believing a lot of these people join the Federal Bureau of Investigation to go kick in the door of a pro-life guy in Bucks County, Pennsylvania at 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning when he and his wife and kids are in the house with long guns. I just have a hard time believing that that's why they went to Quantico and the FBI Academy and everything else, you know?
Well, I agree with you. There are always those kinds of people. How about the poor guy whose daughter was molested in school in Loudoun County, Virginia? And he's at the school board meeting and protesting, and they'd haul him away and charge him. And then poor Peter Navarro, who's the president's top executive, he's the first top executive to a president to go to prison because they had a rigged deal in Washington, D.C. And they showed up. He lives only a few blocks from the FBI headquarters in D.C., and they waited till he got on a plane, and they sent a SWAT team to take him off the plane and embarrass him. That stuff's got to stop.
Yeah.
That's just got to stop.
Yeah, it really does. And there was the old days. It used to be where you'd turn yourself in, you know, with your attorney, and they didn't,
He would have done that.
I mean, it's like they act like these guys are
unnecessary, and Garland is totally responsible for that type of activity. Well, look at Mar-a-Lago. Jack Smith and Garland sent a SWAT team down to the president of the United States' home in Mar-a-Lago. They didn't have to do that, and then they scattered pictures around and made a big deal. Oh, and took the press with them when they went to Roger Stone, the former advisor to President Trump. They went to his house early in the morning and took CNN with them. I mean, this stuff is awful. This is tyranny. It's really tyranny.
You're 100% right, my friend. You are absolutely right. I'm glad you're speaking out on this. And for conservatives too, we have to make sure that as the pendulum swings, we don't let it get back to this, because I think we've all realized now that so much of the power we've given the government to protect us from terrorists, they turned around and weaponized it and used it for political purposes. And we've got to really be mindful of how much more power we give them in the name of keeping us safe, because they keep abusing it.
They have abused it, and we need to rein them in. And the only way you can rein them in is to make them civilly or criminally responsible, but only if they're malicious and wrongfully intended. I mean, if they're doing their job, no, they deserve immunity. You can't just willy-nilly rein them in. But when they're acting like this kind of stuff that's been happening the last few years, well, man, we've got to stop it.
Yeah, well said. I appreciate your time today, Congressman, former Congressman Bob Livingston. Please look at his website, livingstongroupdc.com. Keep up the good fight. We'll post a link to your op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, a letter to Merrick Garland, and he does owe you an apology. He owes America an apology. We're never going to get it. But thank you for your courage and speaking out. And thanks for coming on our show today. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much for having me, Rich.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, we got a lot to get to today. We're loaded up, and this is great. This is a great day for all of us. It's a lot of fun. Pam Bondi's going to fix a lot of this. I got a ton of audio for you from Pam Bondi's confirmation hearing today. I want to tell you, you know, as 2025 gets to a start here, if you've been putting off complicated dental work, please go see Dr. Mike Veneria. I've talked about him so many times, and I got to tell you, he's such a great guy. He helped me with my snoring. You know, he gave me this mouth guard that I didn't have. Actually, when I was in the hospital last week, the first night I went in, I forgot to pack it. You know, I left the doctor's office, and I knew I was going to go to the emergency department. I knew they were going to keep me overnight. I thought one night. I didn't realize it'd be seven, but I went home, and I got all my stuff. I forgot my mouth guard. And that first night, I woke up the next day, my jaw, I got a headache. That mouth guard was great. But that's what I mean. Dr. Mike is my dentist. He takes great care of me and my family, and he is the master of dental implants. For 10 years, over, now it's going to be 11 years, recognized among his peers as the master of dental implants, master of complicated dental work, master of complicated dental procedures. In fact, other dentists refer their patients to Dr. Mike for things like dental implants. He has two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, right over the bridge, easy to get to. And if you're like, hey, I'm in Pennsylvania, why would I go to Jersey for a dentist? Because you go to the best. Even if you got to drive a little, it's worth the trip. Plus, he's one of us. You know what I mean? Great guy, great conversationalist, great music playing in the office, and a great staff dedicated to your care and your comfort. So if you've been putting off going to see the dentist, if you've been putting off getting that complicated procedure, if you're nervous about it, don't be. Get a free implant consultation with Dr. Mike Venaria. Just go to VenariaDental.com, VenariaDental.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Reservoir Dogs. Remember, you hear this song, you think about Reservoir Dogs. I don't want to hear anybody talking about talk show hosts. That's a fugazi. Pam Bondi is going to be a kick-ass attorney general. That's right. She's going to be a fantastic AG. I got some great audio for you, which I'm going to share with you in the 5 o'clock hour. But, you know, thinking about Merrick Garland, right, and what Bob Livingston said here, and I think about parents. I think it's one of the things that swung this election for Donald Trump. When that school board letter came out, when Merrick Garland targeted those parents, I'm glad Pam Bondi mentioned that today. You know, targeting parents at school board meetings. So the other day when I was in the hospital, the woman came in to do my my IV, to put in the PICC line, as it's called, so that I can be able to get the IV antibiotics at home, which I'm showing the PICC line again on YouTube here. So she came in, and we were chatting about things. And obviously, when people are doing that, they don't want to be political about anything. But, you know, we were chatting, and she said, what kind of work do you do? Because she was thinking about ensuring that the PICC line would stay in my arm. I said, well, I'm a radio talk show host. And she said, oh, what station? I said, Talk Radio 1210 WPHD in Philadelphia. She goes, oh, okay. She goes, and she named some people who were involved very big in the parental rights movement. And I said, I know all of them. They've been on my show and, you know, got a new listener out of it, which is great. But she said, yeah, you know, during COVID, I actually pulled my kids out of school. Now, this is a woman who is not rich and powerful. She's a nurse. Does really good work. She's a traveling, you know, then she goes to people's homes and the hospitals and helps people put in these PICC lines. She didn't do the PICC line herself, but she coordinated all the care, arranging the nurses and the medicine and everything else. So that's a great example of this, right? Probably was not a political person. COVID happens. She's furious about the schools being shut down, kids wearing masks, whatever it is. Pulls her kids out of public school. Says enough is enough. People like that get a big wake-up call. And then they get threatened. They get threatened by the Attorney General of the United States. Hey, you better stay in your lane. Sit down and shut up. Be a good little boy or girl. Or you just may find out the FBI is in the back of that school board meeting. And look, I never thought the FBI was really going to be in the back of a school board meeting. But that's the point. People hear those things. And then they start thinking to themselves, well, how would my employer feel about that? You know, this world we live in today, where the government can just intimidate and harass people into complicity, right? To silence. What is it like for a mom like that if a big black SUV shows up outside her house? Two SUVs. And armed agents go to the front door. And you know how the chit-chat works in these small towns or big towns, whatever it is, right? Be so-and-so, you know, oh, look, Donna had the FBI show up at her house. Whoa, yeah, they think she might be crazy. They need a terrorist, you know what I mean? Then nothing would happen to her. Agents would want to just speak with her, but that's the point. It's just they showed up at her house. So that's the goal here. With that entire thing was that. And people were like, well, I can't afford to lose my job. I can't afford to have my employer think that I'm a terrorist. I can't afford to have the other parents in the community thinking those things about me. So I guess I'll just be quiet. Now, she wasn't quiet. A lot of people said, the hell with that. I'm not going to be intimidated into silence. But for a lot of other people, especially ones that work at woke corporations, they're terrified. That's why I always say to you, you know, reject these verification laws for the internet, these age verification laws, which we're told all the time is to protect the children so that the kids don't go online and look at, you know, bad things. And that is a red herring. That is all about knowing who you are. They want you to have to verify your age so that they can build a database and know exactly who you are. Once that happens, you lose your anonymity on the internet. You lose your ability to speak out against your government because now you always have to worry that they know who you are. I have a friend like this. You know, she works in an industry where she can't be political. And many of her clients that she deals with are woke companies. Yet she's incredibly passionate about her politics. And so she goes online using an anonymous handle on social media. Now, if in the future we pass these stupid age verification laws and now she's got to go online and has to put in her identity and we're told, oh, don't worry, it'll immediately be destroyed or it'll never be stored or whatever other lie they tell us. And then at some point, she's causing enough of a ruckus with all of her followers online. And suddenly now she gets doxxed. You know, it's like what Lois Lerner did years ago with the IRS. Don't give these people more power. Don't give these people more abilities to harass us and intimidate us. Right now, our ability to be anonymous on social media is no different than what the founders did when they were writing letters to the editor using pseudonyms like Publius. Don't give that up in the name of keeping the children safe. Don't fall for that C word. All right, we got a big 5 o'clock hour straight ahead for you. Big hour, big show, big story. Pam Bondi is going to be a kick-ass attorney general, and Senator Dave McCormick is going to join us next. And that's the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria. Go see him today for your perfect smile. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. If you've been putting off getting that dental work done, please don't put it off. Go see him today, veneriadental.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.